Welcome to the latest edition of Auto Insider, where we're talking cars, car dealerships, and mostly crap about both. I don't know about you, but I think we're about ready to get started.
Hey, Zach here, one half of Your Auto Advocate. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Before we jump in, I just wanted to remind you that back at the YourAutoAdvocate.com website, we have our upcoming release of our free browser extension that allows you to have Auto Advocate insights as you browse the web. Imagine being on CarGurus, Cars.com, or a dealer's website and having our recommendations about a suggested offer price, how negotiable the vehicle is, how many days it's been on the dealer's lot, that information, and more directly in your browser. Just head to yourautoadvocate.com and sign up to get early access. Now, let's hop into the episode. Okay, so we're back for another episode of the Auto Insider podcast, and it's going to be a bit different here today. The voice on the other end of the line is certainly not my father. However, someone that has probably as much, if not more, automotive experience. We're joined today by Randy Henrich. Randy, why don't you, if you don't mind, just give a brief introduction of yourself and, you know, the breadth of experience you have, in particular with automotive law and finance and compliance in the automotive space.
Thanks, Zach. Yes, I've been a consumer credit lawyer for 30 years, and the last 20 of those years has been spent in auto finance. I also worked in credit cards, mobile home financing, and some others. But I've been a consumer auto finance lawyer for the last 20 years at DealerTrack, and now I run my own consulting practice where I advise auto dealers and lenders on the various laws and regulations that they have to comply with in dealing with consumers.
And when we're on the Auto Insider podcast, everyone tunes in to learn and be a more informed car buyer, car shopper, and just in general understand the automotive space. And so what better than to bring in someone like yourself, an industry expert who's working with dealerships, working on behalf of consumers, working kind of soup to nuts when it comes to, you know, one of the trickiest parts of the car buying process, the finance part. And so we're just, I'm personally thrilled to have you on the show, Randy. And I guess let's just dive right in. There's so many different topics that we could cover. Why don't we start with kind of an umbrella topic, like the truth in lending requirements that dealerships face. Can you kind of give us a bit of a history lesson of sorts, maybe on where we are in terms of automotive finance today and how we've gotten to where we are and how that ties in with TILA?
Sure. Truth in lending was passed originally in 1968 as a way to give consumers information about credit transactions. And in the auto finance space, that's called closed-end credit because unlike a credit card, you know what your monthly payment is going to be for a fixed term. Credit cards are called open-end credit because it varies month to month depending on how much you use the card and how much you want to pay. The most important disclosure under Truth in Lending, and auto dealers are the original creditors because the contract you sign is with the auto dealer. And the auto dealer must make what's called a series of truth in lending disclosures prior to your signing any contracts. And the most important disclosure is the annual percentage rate. This is the cost of your credit as a rate of the amount financed.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as an interest rate on a loan, because it can include certain fees and interest, so it may be a little higher than the interest rate, although 0% means 0%.
Sure.
What it does is it gives you a benchmark of the percentage you're paying for credit, and you can then compare that against what other creditors offer, like your local bank or credit union. A truth in lending also requires that the components of what you're buying be itemized.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're buying a add-on product, such as an extended service contract, gap, or some type of vehicle security product, that be all listed. So you can see what you're buying. That's called the amount financed, the total of the car plus the other products. And the finance charge is your cost of credit. It's what is used to calculate the APR, and it's the interest in effect that you pay on the credit transaction. Those are the principal elements of truth in lending. It's good because you can see at a glance what you're buying and what it's costing you to buy that, as well as what your monthly payment is and the term of your monthly payment. So you may be financing it for 60 months. It'll tell you 60 months. It'll tell you what the monthly payment is over that time. And you'll have a basis to compare rates and costs with other financial institutions like banks and credit unions.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I think it's interesting for me to contemplate what life was like before the Truth in Lending Act passed, in the sense that these are generally pretty complex transactions. Maybe they're simple, but you know, if you're doing hundreds of them, if you're the car dealer, they're simple to you. But to the consumer, you make this purchase once every 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I can hardly imagine looking at the paperwork and trying to confidently understand what you were looking at before the Truth in Lending Act, because we hear from so many of our, you know, either commenters back on YouTube or comments on our guides back on the Your Auto Advocate website, of people who are still confused even when they do look at the breakdown, like you just described, and especially when you're in an environment where there can be high pressure sales tactics. You know, it's important to have these protections in place so that the playing field's a bit leveled.
Yeah, the truth in lending disclosures are usually made in the retail installment sales contract,
yes,
not on the purchase order. So the dealer must give you a review copy of the retail installment sales contract that you're free to review and see what the cost of the vehicle is, what the add-on products are, the rate of credit, which is the annual percentage rate, what your monthly payment is, what the payment term is. Those are the key things you want to focus on. There are some dealers who I know you've talked about who do what's called payment packing. Mm-hmm. They put aftermarket products, maybe like Etch or some others, into the price of the vehicle. And that, under truth in lending, is not permitted. If they do that, and it's actually a voluntary product, and they make it mandatory, then the cost of that product has to be designated as a finance charge, mm-hmm. and it's included in the APR calculation. So maybe instead of getting 3.5%, if the etch has been packed into the price of the vehicle, that APR is going to go up to 5.some-odd% under truth in lending. A lot of dealers don't do that, but that's what truth in lending requires. So you want to look at your APR, you want to look at the components of the amount financed, what you bought, and what the fees and taxes and charges are. And you want to look at your APR, your payment amount, and the months that you're going to have to pay it, as well as your down payment.
Randy, did the Truth in Lending Act also bring the right of rescission, or did that come somewhere else?
No, that's in mortgages.
That's in mortgages, gotcha.
Right. There can be a right of rescission if there's a remote delivery of the vehicle, but there are ways to get around that.
So I imagine you've worked with clients in the past, dealerships, to help counsel them on exactly that. You know, be careful, don't do this, but if you are going to do that, you're okay. Is that, you know, a safe assessment or safe judgment or contemplation on my
end? Yes, I've helped dealers to do remote deliveries that don't give you a 3-day right to rescind. And it's fairly easy to do that, but you have to know what you're doing. Mortgages have a rescission of 3 days.
Gotcha. See, I didn't even know. So I appreciate you educating me here. So then, Randy, do you mind? I mean, share with us a little bit about some of the experience that you've had in the past, or maybe... like I know another concept that my father Ray has told me about, it, like spot delivery and other types of I don't want to necessarily say they're not scams or any sort like that, but they're just issues or challenges that can come up during the car buying process. Do you have any examples of those, or could you share with our audience kind of, yeah, actually let's start there. What is spot delivery? And we can kind of walk down that path.
Well, a spot delivery occurs when you fill out a credit application and the dealer is unable to obtain from the lender, the finance company, an approval or a decline on your credit. And generally because your credit doesn't enable them to automatically decision it. So the dealer makes a decision that they think they can find financing for you. Mm-hmm. So they'll deliver you the vehicle before they have a firm commitment from a lender on financing, because the dealer just originates the contract. The dealer is not the one technically making you the loan. If the dealer is unable to find financing for you, you will have signed something called a spot agreement or a conditional delivery agreement, which says if the lender cannot find a bank willing to buy the financing that the dealer has arranged for you, then the dealer or you can terminate the contract within a set period of time, typically 5 to 10 days. Mm-hmm. And you bring the vehicle back, you get any trade-in vehicle back, you get your down payment back, unless you can agree to another set of credit terms that the dealer can get financed by a bank or financial institution. What typically happens in a spot delivery is you'll take delivery of the vehicle and the dealer will get it financed. And you won't have to worry about the conditional delivery agreement. But if the dealer can't get you financed, and there are some unscrupulous dealers who will put you in a vehicle on terms they know they can't get financed, yeah, then the dealer will bring you back in and try to convince you to take other credit terms for the vehicle. And again, what some unscrupulous dealers do is they know they can't get you financed because your credit's not great, but they give you a very favorable deal. You think that's the deal you got, but the dealer brings you back in and gives you a very unfavorable deal if you want to keep the vehicle.
Yeah.
And many customers in that scenario keep the vehicle, and sometimes the dealer will say, well, we've already sold your trade-in. They're not supposed to do that. The conditional delivery agreement says that they can't sell your trade-in.
Yeah.
As the state law. Spot deliveries are governed by state law, not federal law.
Oh, man.
But none of the state laws allow you to sell the trade-in and then bring the customer back in. So it's an area that's ripe for a lot of abuse, but most dealers do it as a convenience to the customer.
Sure.
When they can't get the formal approval. You'll see spot deliveries a lot late on a Saturday, or dealers are open on a Sunday or a holiday. Because the financing companies, the banks, and credit unions may be closed and they can't auto-decision
the
gap. So one thing I wanted to talk about was what happens with a credit application.
Yeah, please.
When you give the dealer a credit application, you sign a credit application. You can do it online using the Submit Here button, which is called an electronic signature. Or you can sign a paper credit application with your wet ink signature. Mm-hmm. That authorizes the dealer to pull your credit. And if the dealer pulls your credit and takes the credit application, they have to let you know within 30 days whether or not you're approved for any credit or declined for credit. Mm-hmm. Typically, they'll let you know much faster.
Sure, they want to make a car deal.
Right. If they decline you for credit, which doesn't happen very often, they'll generally find credit on some terms. If they decline you for credit, they need to send you what's called an adverse action notice that tells you they've declined you and gives you the right to a free copy of your credit report.
Interesting.
Regardless of whether they approve or decline you, they have to give you something called a credit score disclosure notice right up front. And that's a notice that tells you what your credit score is and gives you reasons why your credit score is not better.
Wow.
And that's a very helpful document to have. And you get that from the mere fact of submitting a credit application. The adverse action notice will give you the ability to obtain the reasons why your credit was declined. But the credit score disclosure notice that everybody gets will tell you your credit score and what the reasons are.
Thank you. Hey, Zach here, one half of Your Auto Insider. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We really hope you're enjoying it. If you're interested in learning more about Your Auto Advocate, check us out at yourautoadvocate.com. We have some really exciting things going on that can help you during the car buying process. For example, Deal School was just launched. This is a 50-video, 6-quiz series, about 2.5 hours, that walks you through the process of negotiating the best car deal possible. Get access to things like Deal School and more for free at yourautoadvocate.com. Okay, let's get back to today's episode. Wow. And so as a consumer, you might not think of a benefit of applying for financing through a dealership, you know, being, hey, I'm going to get some insight into why my score is the way it is, but you can and you will. And if you don't get your hands on that, you're missing out on something valuable that you're entitled to have. That's super interesting.
Yeah, a lot of consumers ask, well, if they pull my credit, will it affect my credit score?
Yes.
And the answer to that is generally yes, by a few points. But if you apply for credit to multiple dealers within a short period of time, 10 to 15 days, the credit bureaus will only look at that as one credit application. Yep. Because they know you're shopping for cars. So you won't have your credit score dinged for multiple inquiries, just for the one for auto financing. But submitting a credit application to anyone, credit card, mortgage, auto dealer, can decrease your credit score by a few points. And sometimes one of the reasons that's given for a lower credit score is too many credit inquiries in too short a period of time. But the credit score disclosure notice is a very valuable piece of information to have, so you can work on increasing your credit score.
Yeah, and we get a lot of people, Randy, that'll you know, comment and reach out to us and say, hey, I'm working on building my credit back and, you know, want to be able to get better rates. And we've seen a lot of opportunity and space in refinance. You know, people who have gotten approved for a loan, went through the dealership, the dealer marked up the loan. I mean, they had maybe a 700 credit score, but they're paying 8%, you know, something crazy. And what they need to do is just go to their credit union and refinance and get that down to something more reasonable. And so it's interesting, just the more you interact and engage with people who are constantly, well, I say constantly, but you know, since we have the volume, we get messages every day about people asking these questions around, you know, is this a fair rate and what's affecting my score? And so to know that if you are a car shopper out there and you are submitting an application, listen to Randy, get your hands on this information after the fact so that you can be more informed walking into the dealership or even, you know, outside of the dealership setting. Understanding your credit profile is incredibly important because everything we do in the United States runs on credit.
Yes, and you can get a credit score from the credit bureaus.
Sure.
You can get your credit report free from every credit reporting agency, the three, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, once a year for each of them. So today I could get my TransUnion score in 4 months. I could get my Experian score in 8 months. I could get my Equifax score or my credit reports, and in a year get my TransUnion again. So that's a good way to stay on top of your credit. You go to I think the site is annualcreditreport.com.
Yeah, yep. I think you're spot on. Randy, I have a question for you, and something that's always been top of mind for me, and you spoke to it briefly. Different states have different laws. When we were talking about spot delivery.
Spot deliveries.
You know, my father and I, we frequently talk about how every state has different laws around titling and registering vehicles. And we
yes.
recently did a video and wrote a guide on the website about title washing and how that's even possible. And the reason I bring that up is because I wonder, especially around interest rates and marking up interest rates, do different states regulate that differently? Like in California as a dealer, I know dock fees are capped at $75. In California as a dealer, am I capped at a 2-point increase on an interest rate for a consumer, or is it not state by state? And my overarching question here is, Why is there no federal guideline for this? It's the second largest purchase for a lot of people in their entire lives. And there's this patchwork framework for how to be compliant and how to protect consumers. It's kind of ludicrous to me.
Well, the general philosophy is that the federal laws require that things be disclosed to you, a truth in lending.
Sure.
State laws govern the substance of what a dealer can do and not do. Most states do not have a rate markup cap like California does. Every state has a maximum dock fee that a dealer can charge. And I think it's $85 in California.
Yeah, 85, not 75. Thank you.
And it can be as much as 600 or more in some other states. Some states don't allow dock fees. States also govern the maximum APR that can be charged to a customer. And some states say it's any APR. Some states cap it at 29.9. Some states cap it at 21. I think Massachusetts is one of the states that caps it at 21. Mm-hmm. Arkansas caps it at less. So that's a state law issue, what the maximum APR is. It's a state law issue, what the maximum late charge can be and how many days grace you get. Those are governed by state law because they're substantive things. Federal law just says it has to be disclosed.
Yeah, which I guess conceptually makes sense. Paint with a broad brush from a federal standpoint in terms of get at least ensure that citizens have information, and then on a state-by-state level get more granular in terms of what the actual regulations are. It still is, you know, to someone like myself in this space, it's eye-opening when you do start to see how each state operates so differently. And you know, it's simply because the border exists, and specifically around title washing, which is obviously not with regards
right.
to finance, but you could sell a car in Texas that had been totaled with a clean title, and then it moves to Georgia, and now it's, you know, a clean titled Toyota RAV4 that doesn't have airbags, and it's being sold with a clean title. And it's simply because, well, in the state of Texas, it didn't have to, the state of the title didn't have to be updated to salvaged or branded. And so how that affects finance, I know there are, you know, things there that are obviously different from state to state, like you were sharing. And so it's interesting, as a car buyer, you have to recognize these things. And there's even things with regards to like drive out tags. Like if you buy a car out of state in Massachusetts, you're not driving that home. You can't get drive out tags in the state of Massachusetts.
Right.
It's just kind of crazy how many idiosyncrasies there can be in the purchase of a vehicle.
Absolutely. But state law tends to govern that. There are federal laws against unfair and deceptive acts and practices that the Federal Trade Commission enforces, and title washing would certainly be an unfair or deceptive act and practice.
So, Randy, let's wrap with this, if you don't mind. One of the things that our audience really loves is when my dad shares stories from his career, and even if they're not stories that he personally experienced, but just, you know, from in the trenches. And so I'm curious, can you share any like claims that have been brought against dealers or stories around that you're aware of that can kind of shed light to our audience for what has happened in the past and how, you know, dealers or sellers have been held accountable for that?
I certainly can. There was one dealer who ran an advertisement, and Truth in Lending requires that any advertisement that indicates what the APR is has to tell you what the term, the monthly payment is, and the down payment. And this dealer advertised a 0% APR. And in very small white type against a white background.
That's my favorite type of text, Randy, is white on white. It's so easy to read.
Very. It indicated that the 0% APR was for 2 months. After 2 months, it would go to 29.99.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was unreadable. Well, the Federal Trade Commission didn't like that, so they socked that dealer with an enforcement action. I was in a deposition one time with a dealer about spot deliveries.
Yeah.
And the plaintiff said, you know, spot deliveries are a deceptive practice with this dealer. And they asked the dealer, what percent of your deals that are spot deliveries get unwound, meaning that the financing that's agreed to with the customer is not something that a lender will purchase, and they have to bring the customer back in. Now, that percentage should be less than 10%,
sure.
Maybe well less than 10%. This dealer answered that he unwound about half of his spot delivery transactions.
Oh, no.
Which suggests a deceptive practice of deliberately giving people financing terms that the dealer knew would not be purchased or agreed to by the banks and credit unions, and bringing the customers back in and then socking them if they wanted to keep the car. So that was an interesting lawsuit I was involved in. I'm not sure how it was resolved, but I think the dealer wound up paying some money for that one. Some dealers will pack things like etch and other products into the price of the vehicle. They'll say it's our dealership policy to safeguard vehicles with etch. Whether that's a legitimate statement or not remains in the eyes of the beholder.
Sure.
But that needs to be in the finance charge in the APR. That's a truth in lending violation. And that can be a $2,000 penalty under federal truth in lending for statutory damages. So in a class action, and most dealers have documents that don't let you file class actions, that could be significant if you could find one. Many lenders, in their collection practices, they don't send the proper notices that are required by state law. They repossess vehicles without giving notice and the like. And there's currently pending before the Supreme Court a class action against Ally Bank for wrongful repossession practices.
I was reading about that recently,
And if the Supreme Court allows that to go forward, that could be a very substantial liability.
And if I'm not mistaken, Randy, that was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but that was cross state and also across time, wasn't it? They were looking at people who had improper repossessions over the course of like 25 years or something like that.
Yes, 25 years in all 50 states.
Yeah.
And that was the alleged class. And I don't know if the Supreme Court is going to let that one go, because one thing you need to have in a class action is everybody has to suffer the same harm.
Mm.
And repossession laws are different in the different states.
Exactly.
Although most of them have some version of what's called the Uniform Commercial Code that explains what you have to do to repossess, sell a vehicle, and seek a judgment for any amount over and above what you get on the sale of the vehicle. So that'll be interesting to see what the Supreme Court does.
So Randy, my final question for you is, you know, it's in the name of our business, your auto advocate. What advice do you have to someone listening to this and they're going through the car buying process? What can they do to self-advocate? Obviously, they're listening to a podcast like the Auto Insider podcast. They're reading the guides. They're watching the videos. They're trying to, as my dad always says, knowledge is power. You know, they're trying to gain that knowledge. But I guess what's your two cents? What can someone take away and feel like, okay, I'm going to walk into the dealership, or I'm going to buy private party, whatever it is, and I'm going to be more confident? What's your advice?
Well, my first advice would be to look at some of the things that you all have put out there about how the process works. You need to understand it. You also need to do your homework. You can find on the internet approximately what a dealer pays for a vehicle. You can find on the internet approximately what that vehicle sells for in your market. And you can find on the internet what the average annual percentage rate is for lenders in your area. It's good to have that information going in. It's good to have a approval from a bank or credit union who will generally give you a lower rate than a dealer will to take to the dealer. Dealer will often match it. That's all good to have, so you know what kind of a deal you're getting. And also, I would say, slow the process down. Don't let the dealer rush you. Don't let the dealer overwhelm you. Look at the retail installment sales contract with the truth in lending disclosures so you know what you're buying. so you know what it's costing you to buy that in the way of the finance charge and the APR. Dealer will always try to get you to talk monthly payment. Monthly payment is a way of backing into all the truth in lending stuff. I would negotiate the price of the vehicle first. I know this is something you recommend. And then talk about financing and start with the APR. Don't start with the monthly payment, because a monthly payment can be have a very high APR or cost, depending on what's being financed and what the price is. But I'd slow the process down. Make sure you're comfortable every step of the way. Know what the components of the process are from your auto advocate and other online procedures. And don't be afraid to walk out.
I think that's really well said.
People who walk out often get the best deals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really well said, and I think our audience is, you know, really feeling fortunate right now to have had you on the show today, and I know I've learned a lot just from our conversation, and so I'm sure they have as well, and don't be surprised if I'm sending you an email a month from now saying, hey, people want a round two with you, so we'll have to make sure that sure. Ray can join for that one, and the two of you can go back and forth, but this has been a real treat and a real pleasure, and I can't thank you enough for making the time, Randy.
Sure, I'm very happy to help you, and I wish all your subscribers best of luck with their auto transactions. I think if you slow it down and get educated, you'll do well.